joined by the COVID-19 Response Minister, Chris Hipkins. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning.
If we could start with vaccines and the encouraging news of a second vaccine, Moderna. Can you confirm that New Zealand has some rights to this particular vaccine, like we do with the BioNTech?
There's about 230 vaccine candidates under development at the moment, and of course we're monitoring them all, and we're in conversation with as many of them as we can be. I'm not in a position, to go through each and every one of those 230 vaccine candidates, because there's different degrees of commercial sensitivity around those. We do announce agreements when we reach them, and when they've signed on the dotted line, we do announce those. But we're in good conversation. New Zealand will certainly be getting them.
Okay. Is there also the benefit that if Moderna comes on board, that relieves some of the demand potentially for the BioNTech, which we have announced that we have quite a lot of, or getting a reasonable amount of? Can you then upscale and get more of the BioNTech one?
Look, our strategy here is that we're looking at a portfolio of vaccines, so there won't be a single vaccine for New Zealand. It's likely that we'll have a number of different vaccines coming into New Zealand, probably on different timetables, bearing in mind that we're preparing to be able to distribute those, given that some of them will require different technology. So the Pfizer vaccine requires a very, very low temperature, minus about 80 degrees, in order to store it and to transport it, whereas this latest one, you're talking at a more regular vaccine temperature for storage and for transport. So we're making sure that we've got the trucks and the refrigerators and all the gear ready to go for all of the different potential vaccines, so that at such time as they start arriving, we can start getting them out there as quickly.
Well, that's interesting. So can you tell us what, in terms of the BioNTech one, which is what you have to be negative 80 degrees, what infrastructure do we actually have in the country to enable you to effectively roll that out right out to all your GPs right across the country?
So we're in the process of procuring gear. We've got some gear, but we will need new trucks and new refrigerators in order to make that possible, and that's what the team are working on at the moment.
So what sort of a budget are we talking about for that?
Oh, whatever we need to, basically. So, we're making sure that we're investing in that stuff now, so that when at such time as we need to hit the go button on it, the gear's there, it's ready, and we're ready to distribute
it. To what extent? So, do you have to have a fridge that can go that cold? How would you do it? Would it actually be out to your GPs, or would you have centres? How many of these sort of fridges would you need?
Ultimately, it will depend on how long the vaccine can be stored at different temperatures. So what we know about the Pfizer vaccine is that for the longer-term storage, it needs to be stored at a very, very low temperature. But some of the vaccine candidates can be stored at a slightly higher temperature for a short period of time. So it might be that, you get your vaccines delivered daily to the GP practices, and then they can be stored at a higher temperature whilst they're being administered. So all of the logistics of that are being worked through, bearing in mind that for some of these vaccines that information is not yet final. So that's part of the R&D process is locking all of that down.
Let's go to masks. Can you explain to the taxi industry and those taxi drivers why you aren't making it mandatory in the taxis in Auckland?
So we did look at taxis. There's a variety of factors that come into play around taxis, one of which is enforcement becomes a potential issue. Now, I heard a taxi driver on your show just before saying if someone gets into my cab and says that they're not going to wear a mask, the only choice I have is to tell them that I'm not going to carry them and lose their business, or carry them without a mask.
Yes, but it's psychological, isn't it? If you put an enforcement order, people will react to that. That's how you're hoping everyone, it's peer pressure. It's that if it's mandatory, people will get into the habit. So at least you'll get most people complying getting into taxis.
One of the things that we also factored in the decision there was the degree of distance. So you're in a much smaller group of people. The taxi driver themselves will be wearing a mask. That's mandatory. Most people, when they sit in a taxi, sit in the back seat, which means they're distanced from the driver. So the taxis can still do the things that we ask the businesses to do. Maintaining good hygiene in their cab is actually one of the best things they can do to protect themselves and protect their passengers.
What changed with this decision? What was the advice, the medical advice that you received that made you change this decision?
Look, it's something that we've had under constant review. The last time we considered this was back around Labor weekend, where the advice at the time from public health officials was that we should introduce masking at level one on a temporary basis. One of the things that Cabinet was very mindful of when we considered that was not having the rules changing all of the time. We do want to have some stability and predictability in the rules, and that's one of the reasons why...
Well, why didn't you just leave it in force after the last time you had it in?
Well, at the moment, the public health advice was not to do that. It was at the time, it was to reduce the mask usage. But then also, the advice here is shifting all of the time. The decision the Cabinet has made yesterday is actually slightly ahead of public health advice. So the public health advice was, again, to introduce masking on a temporary basis while we're investigating this current group of cases that we're dealing with.
But we know that the epidemiologists and the WHO, since about June, if you go back to about June, there was quite a bit of debate earlier in the year, but about June it was when the WHO advice changed. A number of the likes of Michael Baker and others started saying, you know, masks make sense. Even the cloth masks work on public transport. Why has New Zealand been such a late adopter to this?
Yeah, so look, we weigh up a variety of different factors in this, including the degree of public goodwill to the measure, towards those measures, the likelihood of compliance. We look very closely at that. So all of those things, you know, weigh up. But some of the countries that we can get compared with have much more authoritarian regimes than New Zealand. So if you look at Taiwan, they've got a much greater degree of compliance, but they're much more authoritarian approach to the way they're doing their COVID-19 response than here in New Zealand. We've been very successful because New Zealanders have all bought into the response that we have, and we've had a high degree of compliance when we've asked people to do things.
Could I just ask you quickly about the COVID card or the Tracer app? I've seen some reports that you're looking at including Google and Apple software within the app that would Bluetooth track contacts or COVID-19, if you came into contact with someone on COVID-19. Is that progressing?
Yep, so we've got the COVID card trial underway at the moment. That's due to wrap up in the next few days, and we should have the results of that within the next week or two. So that's the first piece in the puzzle that will be very useful. We are looking at the technology that we could incorporate within the app. One of the key things for us is concerns around privacy and making sure that we're protecting people's privacy. So the COVID Tracer app at the moment works on the basis that you own your own data, and the government doesn't pull that data away from you. You own it. You get to control what happens with it. So anything we did in that GPS Bluetooth technology space, we would be working on the same principle that any information that your phone or any device you had, you were collecting was your
And looking
data.
At the Google Apple technology, from what I've read, it doesn't necessarily track your location. There is a privacy element there that they're looking after. It just notes if you've been in the vicinity of someone with COVID-19 and pings in on your Bluetooth. So that would make sense. Is that something you are involved with Apple and Google on?
Yes, we are looking at that. But I do want to say here there's no silver bullet because, of course, that technology relies on other people having the same technology as well. And you'll come into contact with a lot of people who aren't carrying a phone or who aren't carrying a card, and therefore we're going to need to have ways of tracking that as well if we're in the position of having to contact Trace for you because you test positive for
COVID-19. When could that be up and running, that Apple-Google element to the COVID app?
Look, I'm not in a position to put a time frame on that at the moment, but I can say that, you know, it's something that we're actively investigating.
Minister, thank you very much for your time. COVID-19 Minister Chris Hipkins there.